The Untouchables. Finding the New Middle. If the flattening of the world is largely but not entirely unstoppable, and if it holds out the potential to be as beneficial to American society in general as past market evolutions have been, how does an individual get the best out of it? What do we tell our kids? My simple answer is this. There will be plenty of good jobs out there in the flat world for people with the right knowledge, skills, ideas, and self-motivation to seize them. But there is no sugarcoating the new challenge. Every young American today would be wise to think of himself or herself as competing against every young Chinese, Indian, and Brazilian. In Globalization 1.0, countries had to think globally to thrive or at least survive. In Globalization 2.0, companies had to think globally to thrive, or at least survive. In Globalization 3.0, individuals have to think globally to thrive, or at least survive. This requires not only a new level of technical skills, but also a certain mental flexibility, self-motivation, and psychological mobility. I am certain that we Americans can indeed thrive in this world. But I am also certain that it will not be as easy as it was in the last 50 years. Each of us, as an individual, will have to work a little harder and run a little faster to keep our standard of living rising. Globalization went from globalizing industries to globalizing individuals, said Vivek Paul, the Wipro president. I think today that people working in most jobs can sense how what they are doing integrates globally. I am working with someone in India. I am buying from someone in China. I am selling to someone in England. As a result of the ability to move work around, we have created an amazing awareness on the part of every individual that says, not only does my work have to fit into somebody's global supply chain, but I myself have to understand how I need to compete and have the skill sets required to work at a pace that fits the supply chain. And I had better be able to do that as well or better than anyone else in the world. That sense of responsibility for one's own advancement runs deeper than ever today. In many global industries now, you have got to justify your job every day with the value you create and the unique skills you contribute. And if you don't, that job can fly away farther and faster than ever. In sum, it was never good to be mediocre in your job. But in a world of walls, mediocrity could still earn you a decent wage. You could get by and then some. In a flatter world, you really do not want to be mediocre or lack any passion for what you do. You do not want to find yourself in the shoes of Willie Loman in Death of a Salesman when his son Biff dispels his idea that the Loman family is special by declaring, "Pop, I'm a dime a dozen, and so are you." An angry Willie retorts, "I am not a dime a dozen. I am Willie Loman, and you are Biff Loman." I don't care to have that conversation with my girls, so my advice to them in this flat world is very brief and very blunt. Girls, when I was growing up, my parents used to say to me, "Tom, finish your dinner. People in China and India are starving." My advice to you is, girls, finish your homework. People in China and India are starving for your jobs. And in a flat world, they can have them. Because in a flat world, there is no such thing as an American job. There is just a job. And in more cases than ever before, it will go to the best, smartest, most productive, or cheapest worker, wherever he or she resides. The New Middle. It is going to take more than just doing your homework to thrive in a flat world, though. You are going to have to do the right kind of homework as well. Because the companies that are adjusting best to the flat world are not just making minor changes. They are changing the whole model of the work they do and how they do it in order to take advantage of the flat world platform and to compete with others who are doing the same. What this means is that students also have to fundamentally reorient what they are learning and educators how they are teaching it. They can't just keep the same old model that worked for the past 50 years, when the world was round. This set of issues is what I will explore in this and the next chapter. What kind of good middle-class jobs are successful companies and entrepreneurs creating today? How do workers need to prepare themselves for those jobs? And how can educators help them do just that? Let's start at the beginning. The key to thriving as an individual in a flat world is figuring out how to make yourself an untouchable. That's right. When the world goes flat, the caste system gets turned upside down. In India, untouchables are the lowest social class. But in a flat world, everyone should want to be an untouchable. Untouchables, in my lexicon, are people whose jobs cannot be outsourced, digitized, or automated. And remember, as analyst David Rothkopf notes, most jobs are not lost to outsourcing to India or China. Most lost jobs are outsourced to the past. That is, they get digitized and automated. The New York Times Washington Bureau used to have a telephone operator receptionist. Now it has a recorded greeting and voicemail. That reception job didn't go to India. It went to the past, or it went to a microchip. The flatter the world gets, the more anything that can be digitized, automated, or outsourced will be digitized, automated, or outsourced. As Infosys CEO Nandan Nilekani likes to say, in a flat world there is fungible and non-fungible work. Work that can be easily digitized, automated, or transferred abroad is fungible. One of the most distinguishing features of the flat world is how many jobs, not just blue-collar manufacturing jobs, but now also white-collar service jobs, are becoming fungible. Since more of us work in those service jobs than ever before, more of us will be affected. Of course, not everything can be traded across national borders. Alan Blinder, the noted Princeton economist and former vice chairman of the Federal Reserve, argued in a very smart essay titled Fear of Offshoring. He explained, "At any point in time, the available technology, especially transportation and communications technologies, largely determines which goods and services are easy to trade internationally and which are hard or impossible to trade. Simplifying this underlying reality, economic theorists typically conceptualize the world's goods and services as falling into one of two bins, tradable or non-tradable, what Nilekani calls fungible and non-fungible. Traditionally, any item that can be put in a box and shipped, roughly manufactured goods, was considered tradable, while anything that cannot be put in a box, like services, or was too heavy for shipping, like cement, was thought of as non-tradable. But that is now vestigial thinking. Because technology is constantly improving, and because transportation seems to grow easier and cheaper over time, the boundary between what is tradable and what is not tradable is constantly shifting. Over time, more and more things become tradable. In particular, boxes are simply not what they once were. The old assumption that if you can put it in a box, you can trade it, is now hopelessly obsolete, because packets of digitized information can now play the role that boxes used to play. Many services are now tradable, and many more will surely become so.